Good afternoon. This is an informal hearing of three different cases before the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchek, and a fair crowd of people. There's three cases here, and before I announce them, let me just ask between staff and MDU, would there be any objection to consolidating the three cases since they're pretty tied together?
No objection from the company.
None from staff.
Okay. So this hearing involves case number PU-23-320, which is a public convenience and necessity application for Applied Digital's second office building. Then PU-23-321 is the public convenience and necessity for Applied Digital's second data center. And PU-23-322 is the electric service agreement between Applied Digital and Dakota Valley, and between Applied Digital and MDU. This is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed facts. If any issues come up that are disputed, we would have to stop this informal and move to a formal hearing. Did either of you have any comments before we start?
I don't.
Okay, so then why don't we go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves with the microphone for the record, please.
Brian Johnson, staff. Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Leif Clark, PSC staff.
Chris Hansen, PSC staff.
William Behrman, outside counsel for MDU.
Adam Renfin, staff.
Paul Sanderson, MDU.
Travis Jacobson, MDU.
Etienne Steinman, Applied Digital.
Larry Oswald, Montana, Dakota.
Darcy Nigam, MDU.
Allison Walden, MDU.
Stephanie Bosch, MDU.
All right. Any comments from staff before we get started?
Nope.
Okay. The company typically goes first. I'll turn it over to you, Paul, or whoever you want to kick it off for MDU.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Darcy Nigam's going to lead the discussion here. We're here, again, seeking approval in the three cases. The only thing I'd reference, Mr. Chairman, is in the electric service agreement with Applied, we did file an application for trade secret protection. There are some confidential information contained in that agreement. We're willing to talk about that today, but if some of those topics come up, we would ask that we be allowed to do that in a private session pursuant to the admin code rules on that. And we did today submit a proposed order approving the protection of information. And this is all the same key. We're seeking protection of the confidential rate and cost information and the customer's operational details related to load characteristics. We sought the same protection in the first ESA. So nothing new, but anticipating there may be questions, we're ready to address those, but we would ask that we do that in a confidential portion of the session at the end.
Okay, very good. We'll see if we need to do that or not.
And with that, I'd turn it over to Mr. Nigam.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Good morning, commissioners.
Afternoon,
it is. I'm sorry. Good afternoon, commissioners. So today before you, we're talking about the three filings that Montana Dakota Utilities did make. Two of the requests dealt with temporary authority to extend service for Applied Digital's Ellendale site. This would be for a second office location and also for a second data center location. And then also along that, we also had an application for a second data center at Ellendale. And we'll get in a map in a little bit to show the location of those. Temporary authority of the two certificates of public convenience and necessity were granted in November. And the permanent authority requests were also submitted in November as well. So when we talk about the electric service agreement and the second Ellendale data center facility, we are looking at 225 megawatts of high-density data center computing This would end up being high-performance computing this time, which would be different from the type of computing we would have had at the data center, number one. So more things that are along the lines of, like, AI and those sorts of technologies.
And so the first one is more of, like, Bitcoin?
It was on the crypto mining side, yes. So we look at the application for the second ESA. This service is provided under Rate 45, like the first one was. The office building will be served under standard customer Rate 30. The second location for the data center is located inside the service area agreement that Montana Dakota Utilities did sign and execute with Dakota Valley. Regarding the Rate 45 requirements, the ESA and the data center number two do meet all of the requirements. As far as being new load, data center centric and high density data center computing, they did meet the minimum load requirements that are part of Rate 45, which was greater than 10 megawatts. There is the requirements in there for interruption of service are contained within it. And also the approved electric service agreement that was agreed upon does have terms, things that are similar to the first electric service agreement as far as pricing, billing. The one notice I would end up making, you know, there is, for the extension of service we have, there is a kayak in place for the funding for the customer on that. The original one, we did have that more upfront that was focused. This one is more as a kind of a pay-as-we-go along sort of format that we end up having as far as for that kayak. But there's no expenditure of cost that Montana Dakota is making towards this project that are not recovered by the customer. So they are paying everything up front for the extension of service. This is a map of the data center area and also our substations that we do have at Ellendale. So in this map, the substations that we have, this gray box down here is the Ellendale 345 substation. This was the Ellendale 230 kV substation that we had that's just across the road. This is the data center number one location, and data center number two is just located north. And so that's about 2,100 feet that it ends up being. And we're looking to provide service out of the Ellendale 230 kV substation, where the first data center is taking service out of the Ellendale 345 kV substation.
Why did you decide that?
Part of that is just additional facilities that were open. You know, we've got some expansion work that we're doing at Ellendale 345 with the addition of the MVP, the LRTP project going between Ellendale and Jamestown. And so at least to use some of that space, we had moved out of the Ellendale 230 substation, the terminations from the lines that used to go over towards Oaks and then also back towards Wishick. So there was some available breaker bays and space that was available. One of the pieces I wanted to cover next, and this would be part of the order of point four that was part of the settlement agreement that we did have for the electric service agreement in PU-22-371 for the service of the first data center. We had agreed that we would perform a MISO market study looking at the impact to our other customers for the addition of this load that we ended up with. And the results of this study, including the report from the consultant and also the additional analysis that we did through our own fuel and purchase power analysis modeling, were filed with the commission on November 9th. I would just make a quick note that Adam did participate, and thank you, Adam, at least in the study work. And I'm not aware of any issues that Adam had with the way the study was conducted or in the results that came from it. So one of the assumptions we end up making when we conducted this study that was done by 1898, you know, the study itself, you know, used ProMod, which ends up taking the network topology, all of the generators and loads, and it's able to go through and do a dispatch simulation that takes a look at congestion that ends up being a part of that. So it's one of the tools that's used, you know, on market efficiency projects, those sorts of things, of taking a look and saying, where is congestion on the system And then also, what can you do as different projects, different ways with loads that kind of causes that to change or shift? So we went out to a consultant to perform that study, as we do not use ProMod ourselves. In that, the topology we used was trying to create what would be a 2024 base case model. So looking at what our existing load is, what ends up being the transmission system as it exists today. So it does not include the 345 kV line that go from Jamestown to Ellendale. And then also looked at all of the generation projects that were connected or planned to be connected in that area. So one of the wind projects we did add was the one over at Badger Wind at Wishick, which this commission has approved the siting for that. So it was included as part of the study. And then in that, we ended up with three change cases that we ended up creating as part of the study. One to look at no data center load that would have been connected at Ellendale. And then we would have 180 megawatts of load we would connect at Ellendale for a data center. And then of not knowing in discussions with Applied, we assumed another 180 megawatt data center that would come along at a later point in time. We included that as the second change case. And then we actually went a step farther and included a third change case, which was taking a look at adding another 100 megawatts of data center load in that area. And it actually would be connected to a wind project kind of to the west of Ellendale, kind of on the border with South Dakota, is kind of how that modeled out at and looked at. So in doing that, we were able to take a look and see how congestion and the locational marginal prices changed on an annual basis in that 2024 case that was created. In that, at least to show the impact on our MDU customer load, because all of our load has a single pricing point in MISO, the MDU.MDU. We did do some weighting of some of the area nodal prices that ProMod did calculate. So in that, we looked at Heskett, which would be representative of the prices that Bismarck Mandan would expect to receive, of about a 40% weighting. And then also we ended up using 20% in the Dickinson area. The Little Muddy 7 is a bus that's up at Williston, and then Baker 8 is one in Baker, Montana. And so kind of got that spreading of pricing across our system we ended up using and weighted the different monthly LNPs that came out of that study. And then we took that LNP pricing, and we calculate our own modeling that we do with Plexos in-house that's part of our financial plan. In that, typically, we use an energy forecast that does come from Wood and Mackenzie. And so we substituted out for these four change cases the LNP prices that came along from the study with 1898. And then we went and had Plexos rerun its simulation for each of those change cases, you know, based upon what the load cost would have been to our other native customer load. And then in that, we were able to make the determination then of what would end up being the impact that we would have on our other customer loads for the additions of the data center load itself. And so one of the things we ended up seeing, you know, when we did this study, you know, in particular, there was a lot of negative congestion, as we would expect down in the Ellendale area, largely because there's this excess amount of wind generation. And the transmission really can't get all of that generation out at time, which leads to a lot of the congestion that's in place down there. And so what we saw is really the focal point of any sort of changing in pricing is really down at that node that's at Ellendale, where the data center does what it was supposed to and we expected, which was to basically alleviate some of that congestion on the transmission system. So in that, we end up seeing that, you know, the impact in pricing, if there is one, is more centric just to what's occurring down in that Ellendale area, and really the broader impact to our rest of our customers is really minimized. Or is small in nature as compared to the overall benefits that our other customers are receiving through the agreements with Applied. So this ends up being a representation when we look at 2024 and of those four change cases that we ended up having. In the base, we end up seeing by months what the average LNP prices would end up being for those months. So January of 2024 is 2513. When you look at adding the 180 megawatt loads plus an additional 180 plus an additional 100, so we're talking about having 460 megawatts of additional load at Ellendale once we get out the case, that change case number three, we end up seeing that the LNP prices in January for our native customer loads would increase from 2513 to 2633, ends up being the impact. And then this table does show what it would look like for the rest of the year. So when we run that through Plexos, what we end up seeing, this ends up being the difference that we would have between the total cost for our customers for fuel, also fixed and variable O&M, and as well as market purchases that we would have for the base case and those three change cases. So percent increase in fuel and purchase power that we would have with the existing data center for the ESA number one would end up being an increase in customer costs associated with this of 0.25%. The second data center or something like that would add an additional 1% of total cost, and then about 1.5% once you add in the South Dakota data center as well. So the one comment I would make, at least what we ended up seeing for energy prices in 2023, fairly matched well as far as what the study from 1898 had predicted that we would end up seeing. So.
Darcy?
Yes.
What does the, how does it look if you add, or what do you think is going to happen when that LRTP line gets constructed and you have a new pathway out? So you don't have as much congestion that this facility would be sucking up, basically.
I think it just tends to, Commissioner Fedorchak, as far as that question, what I expect to see, I think that things will pretty much, I would say more normalized. And at least there's probably, we would just see less variation in these change cases that we would expect to see. So I think everything kind of just kind of converges towards what case number three looks like. I go back to that.
So I don't understand that. What do you mean looks like case number three?
So that
nothing?
I don't think it will have a significant, if anything, it will take some of the other negative congestion or pricing we might have and kind of normalize that, at least with the rest of MISO. We tend to be in an area of MISO, except for the past year, at least an area of MISO where we see much broader negative congestion to the rest of the footprint. And so what that project is expected to do is really more of normalize some of that negative congestion.
So the prices will go up.
There's a chance that that negative congestion kind of goes away, and at least our asset energy price we'd have in the LMP kind of levelizes off to where everyone else is, except depending upon how many additional interconnection requests come from other generators that want to try to get some additional interconnections in our area.
Mm-hmm. Will happen.
It could put us kind of back to the place where we were. But in the absence of more generation coming, I think it kind of just lets us look more on a pricing side what the utilities to the east of us have.
Which means higher prices.
Which means we would see our prices would go up.
What does this project do to that? Does it help? Does it hurt? Does it make them go up more?
I don't think it hurts it. I think what it does is it continues. It actually is another way to allow more generation to connect.
True.
In the area, this project does, because it does serve as a sink, at least for additional projects that may come on. And actually may make it easier for projects that other may want to come on that would have larger upgrades. This could actually alleviate some of it for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we end up seeing a lot of that negative pricing is really, focused down in that Ellendale area, of which case we end up having, about 5% or less, I think, of our total load is down there. I think it peaks at about 20 megawatts in that pocket. So that way it doesn't have that broader impact we end up seeing in this study, at least to the overall cost to serve our customers. So one of the things I would comment as well, maybe before I go away, when we take a look at the difference between the base case and existing data center, we're in this neighborhood of, somewhere just around probably about $200,000 of increase in cost, at least if the model is picking up and showing, that increase is offset, by the costs we would end up having, from the sharing mechanisms, at least on the transmission service and the other sharing mechanisms under the existing ESA, is significantly greater and higher, more benefits to our customers than what this additional cost is. And to that point, I think a lot of the assumptions we made in the first ESA for customer savings and benefits, those things have all come true, and at least they've been what we expected them to have been.
Does that conclude, or
yes,
are you just pausing?
That is the end of my slides. Thank you.
Did you have questions for Darcy?
No, Adam answered them earlier.
Do you have any more?
Well. Are you going to go through the tariff at all, or is this it? Is this all?
This was it.
And Etienne, did you want to comment on this, or are you just here supportive of what Darcy just said? Or
just here supportive and to answer any questions she might have about the project.
Okay.
I guess I do have some questions about some of the elements of this tariff that probably aren't things that you want to discuss in open. So I don't know if you guys have other questions or if it would be appropriate to go to that now.
So if I could ask, are you talking the tariff or the electric service agreement?
The electric service agreement, sorry.
Okay. Nope, that's fine. I just, if it was tariff, I think we could do it now. But.
Well, if there's no other questions, then the remaining questions deal with the confident.
You can go ahead.
We just say if they are, we'd ask to go into a private hearing pursuant to Admin Code 6902.0908, which allows us to talk about the materials we've sought as trade secret protection in a private setting. The representatives of MDU all are familiar and they're okay, and we know staff is accessed.
Okay.
So just the public portions.
Okay. I want to ask a question that I don't know if it is protected or not. And so I can ask it in a way you can just tell me that. The difference between the interruptibility of this project and I think you used a different term for it, but to me more of data processing as opposed to the first project, which was crypto. Is the difference between the interruptibility something that is public, or should that be discussed in the closed session?
So the agreement, I would say the agreement does contain information that does deal with interruptibility. I think if we talk about the differences between them, we'd like to cover that in a closed session.
Okay. I'm just in a little bit of a pause because for the open record stuff, it's a very precise script that we use to go into the closed session, and I did not anticipate that, and I'm waiting on.
And Mr. Chairman, I know that specific term is an important piece for our customer that they've asked. You know, it's confidential. We treated it confidential in the prior case. We're certainly happy to, but we would consider that trade secret on the customer's, you know, confidential business rates.
We're getting in.
Okay, as soon as I get that exact language so that we don't get in trouble from the Attorney General. So we'll just, was there any other questions?
I have some clarifying stuff that we can go through while we're waiting here. So on that last slide where you kind of lay out the fuel and purchase power costs, so for clarity, this isn't supposed to identify the total fuel and purchase power cost to serve the existing or the new data centers. This is just the cost to the remaining portion of MDU's system.
Correct. This would just be our native customer load.
Okay.
Impact, yes.
Okay. So.
Yep. It does not include anything for the data center.
Okay. So that their energy costs aren't accounted for in these total numbers.
That's correct.
Okay. But this would, and then to kind of further that point a little bit, so this is just the energy costs to the native load, as you refer to it, the rest of MDU's customer base.
Yeah, so it would include the fuel, fixed, variable O&M, and then whatever our purchased energy amounts were.
Okay.
It would either come from a contract or from the MISO market.
Okay. So, and the additional cost, you know, as you go from base to existing to the expansions, that's largely attributable to congestion.
The changes in congestion that it would end up having. So that, and it would be a reflection at least of this pricing on the slide prior to that. So
sure.
So we would have taken the energy forecast from Woods and McKenzie that would have been originally in the Plexos model, and we would have included these in it as a replacement.
Okay. And then one thought I kind of had. So I know we had talked about this when the report came out. Mm-hmm. But we had some email exchanges about kind of the calculation. You know, there was this here, and then I had done my own calculation. So I'd taken this page here, and somewhere within that report, I forget what page it was on, and had listed some estimates of energy usage by the rest of the customer base on a monthly basis. And I took that differential between the base and then the existing expansion, and just to try to figure out, okay, what's the dollar differential in that average LMP price.
Yep.
And it totaled up to more. I mean, not like $5 million, but it totaled up to more. Maybe not quite twice what's on here. And I was just kind of curious your thoughts on that. I know those were estimates. It wasn't saying 585,000 kilowatt hours. It was like 500 to 700.
Sure.
And I think I used 600 in my calculation.
So the one thing that differs a little bit is once we take this energy forecast out, you know, we in a sense dispatch our generation fleet against this as an alternative to what the market is. And so we end up seeing at least our existing resource prices aren't changing, but the market price that's available changes through these. So if we end up purchasing on average, it's somewhere around 30 to 40% of our average comes from the market itself, which would be impacted by these prices. Everything else is unimpacted, and at least every other unit of price we would have from our other generating resources would be the same. So as we own more, if we purely were buying and serving everything off the market, then I think the analogy would go back to the analysis you were doing.
Okay.
But in that, we're using a resource whose price isn't changing to serve our load on a most economic basis.
Okay. That actually helps kind of explain a little bit better. So basically between what you're getting from Coyote and Big Stone and
and the wind generation.
Spirit, those kind of things.
Yep.
That accounts for the majority of your energy needs, and therefore its prices aren't changing. So it's just that differential, that 30 to 40% of that. And that's why, which in rough numbers, that's probably about what I was seeing. So that helps kind of paint that picture a little bit better. So I don't know if that did that little rambling make any sense?
By the end, yes.
Okay. It was just something that, as I was,
It was in the report. 1898 was trying to do a similar thing themselves, you know, where they would take a look at what is our load pay, and then also is there any margin at least our generation is getting paid on the other side to try to account for some of that. But I don't think they do it as well as we do by basically trying to go in and dispatch our fleet against what our load obligations in the market are. You know, they're trying to dispatch all generation against, you know, all load.
Sure.
That
sure.
It would have that's in the model.
Makes sense. Okay. So that's that gives me a lot more comfort in these numbers. So thank you for that.
There's time for more questions while we're waiting.
I'm thinking.
Adam?
I think maybe most of mine are better addressed maybe in the closed session.
One other one I had, as you were going through the slides, I think it's one more page back. The 1898 report used a weighting for the different nodes, 40% at Hess, so essentially 40% in Bismarck, Mandan, 20% Dickinson, 20% Williston, and 20% Baker, Montana. A little bit ago, you had also mentioned that only about 20% of your load is in the Ellendale load pocket.
20 megawatts, yes.
It's 20 megawatts.
Yeah.
So on a percentage basis, that wouldn't be large enough to consider 5%.
It's like 5%.
So probably not significant. And that's, it was just a thought I had. I just wanted to kind of explore that thought a little bit to see if this was a reasonable.
And so the 1898 report did not use these weighting percentages themselves. They would come up with what a price was at each of these nodes. And then so we would take and weight it to come back to saying here's what an average LNP was for our MDU.MDU load that we could put inside of Plexus.
Okay.
Should we, do you think you have more questions or should we just pause the hearing so the recording's not just running for nothing? Until we get what we need here.
I can't imagine it's going to take much longer. I mean, we can, Adam can dance for us or something.
Yeah. And sing, too. Hey, I better do this in case anyone's listening. So they can hear me sing as well.
Okay. So we can just stand in recess?
I think we can.
Okay, we'll stand in recess. Shouldn't be more than a few minutes, so I don't hope no one leaves completely, but you can at least get up and stretch and turn the recorder off. And are you ready? You know we're going to stop the recording.
Yep.
Here. So, okay.
Okay, you got your back line now.
Okay. We'll reconvene this informal hearing. We've handled the business that is complete, that we're confident is public. But this meeting also concerns trade secret and protected information pertaining to the electric service agreement regarding Applied Digital. The legal authority for closing this meeting is North Dakota Century Code 44-04-18.4. The closed portion will be recorded, and all members of the commission are reminded to limit their discussion during the closed portion of the meeting to the announced topic. Any collective decision, collective commitment, or other final action by the commission must occur after it reconvenes in an open meeting. We'll now ask the members of the public who are attending the meeting to leave the room, and there are none. We anticipate adjourning the closed portion of the meeting and reconvening the open portion of the meeting at, is there any estimate?
So what? 20 minutes, maybe?
We'll say 4 o'clock. The minutes will show that the closed meeting is beginning at approximately 3:41 and is attended by the three commissioners, and would everyone else state their name directly into the microphone so we have a record.
Commissioner Crispin, real quickly, too. The application was filed with another document in this. That's why there's a staff response. So once I verify the application is there, I will do a staff response, and we will do the process for protecting the information. But that's why it hasn't been granted protection yet at this point.
Okay.
So Brian Johnson, PSC staff.
Adam Renfin, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, staff.
Eve Clark, staff.
William Behrman, MDU.
Paul Sanderson, MDU Resources.
Travis Jacobson, Montana, Dakota.
Etienne Snyman, Applied Digital.
Larry Oswald, Montana, Dakota.
Darcy Nigam, MDU.
Allison Walden, MDU Resources.
Stephanie Bosch, Montana, Dakota.
Okay, so we'll stop the recording and stop the broadcast.